Welcome to the Holistic Psychiatrist Podcast, a place for inspiration, insight, and information on holistic mental health. Join your host, Dr. Alice Lee, and discover critical information on safe, effective psychiatric medication withdrawal. Explore new ideas that enlighten and expand the mind with cutting-edge authors and experts, along with former patients as they share their miraculous healing journeys. It's time to build your well-being from the thought up. It's time for the Holistic Psychiatrist Podcast. Here's your host, Dr. Alice Lee.
Hello and welcome to the Holistic Psychiatrist Podcast, where we're building well-being from the thought up. I'm your host, Dr. Alice Lee, the holistic psychiatrist practicing in New York and Utah. For more information about me and access to free articles, podcasts, and contact information, please check out my website, holisticpsychiatrist.com. Thank you so much for listening today. Today, we're going to talk about nutrition and mental health. And we have a wonderful guest with us today, Dr. Cori Stern from New York. She's been working in her field for many decades. For too long, mental illness has been confined to brain health. And Dr. Cori Stern will be discussing her use of nutrition and how it plays a role in supporting mental health. She'll explain why nutrition is so central to mental health, some of the ways in which we become nutritionally depleted, and how to support recovery and reestablish stress resilience, improve mood and sleep, and longevity through nutrition. So Dr. Cori, thank you so much for being on this podcast. We can start by asking you to introduce yourself a little bit and share with the audience a little bit about your background.
First, I want to thank you for having me on your show, Dr. Lee, because I really admire the work that you do. And I think there needs to be a lot more holistic psychiatry going on in the world. So, yeah.
Thank you so much.
So I am a chiropractor by degree. And I specialize in what I call holistic nutrition. And I've been doing that for 24 years. And as you mentioned, my office is in New York City. So I have a physical practice, but I also see patients virtually from all over the world. It's a very busy practice because there is such a great need for nutritional guidance. There's so much misinformation about nutrition, and people are very confused about it.
You're sought after by people who want your expertise. You've been in this field for how many years?
I've been in my physical practice for 24 years. So I graduated from chiropractic school 25 years ago.
I would imagine that over those 25 years, you've grown a lot in terms of your approach, in terms of using nutrition to help people heal. And so today we're just going to take a very small aspect of your practice, which is how nutrition helps people with their mental health. And this is a field that I stumbled across, back in 2002 with learning about orthomolecular and functional medicine and things like that. I have felt that as a medical doctor, very few medical doctors are really interested in the medicinal application of nutrition in helping people with mental health. And I'm really happy to meet another doctor who is very well-versed in that field and is very dedicated and committed, to using nutrition to help other people get better. So really appreciate all the work that you've done to help move this whole kind of paradigm forward. At this point, you're focusing on this holistic field. And I was wondering if you want to share what led you to have such a strong interest in this holistic field and what makes this whole field very gratifying and rewarding for you.
Yeah, I think my story is actually pretty interesting. I like to say that I started my life as a fetus with bad nutrition. My parents ate very poorly. Their parents ate poorly. I'm third generation American. And in the United States, people started eating processed food really heavily in the 1920s, but even before that, the turn of the century, late 1800s, when processed food was introduced into the mainstream diet, and people started to develop diseases, what we call lifestyle diseases, from eating poor food. So now here I am, this poor unsuspecting fetus being fed garbage by my mom. And I was sick as a child all the time. So not critically ill, but I always had infections, throat, ear, bladder. I was always on antibiotics. And plus, both of my parents were heavy smokers, so I had a lot of exposure to cigarette smoke. I was just a very unhealthy child. By the time I was 15, I developed a chronic strep throat infection that would not respond to anything that was done. No interventions were helping. I was getting put on one antibiotic after another, and I was really quite sick. I was 15. It was the summertime. And I felt so terrible that I was pretty much stuck in bed. I couldn't go hang out with my friends. And I was angry. And I made this decision, or came to a realization, perhaps is a better way to put it, that medical doctors don't seem to know how to heal me. And so I decided I was going to figure it out for myself. And I started doing some research and reading various textbooks. My stepmother was a registered nurse, so I was reading all her books. And then I stumbled on a magazine called Prevention. And that was a holistic health approach to something that I had never seen before. And it was a mainstream magazine. It actually is still in print today. And it talked a lot about nutrition. Just reading one issue of that magazine, I suddenly had this light bulb go off. And I said, that's why I'm sick, because I have really bad nutrition. And I decided to completely change my diet when I was 15. At that time, I was working as a babysitter in a tall, a high rise building in Manhattan. So there was a lot of work. And I was the building babysitter, and I was making $1 an hour, which was good money. This is back in the mid 70s. And I spent all my money on food. I cleaned it up. I stopped eating sugar. I stopped eating processed food, stopped eating preservatives, white flour. And in my local health food store, I found a book called Back to Eden. And that was written in the 1920s. And it's what I call an herbal Bible. It has every herb on planet Earth and its therapeutic application. And I became fascinated with this concept that there are things growing on Earth that we can use to heal ourselves. And I started buying herbs and making concoctions. And long story short, I healed my strep throat infection. And it kind of planted a seed in me that maybe one day I'd be able to help other people to heal themselves through the use of nutrition and natural herbs and things like that. So it was a long, winding road for me to get to where I am today, but I was determined to do it. Yeah.
You know, 15 years old, that's 10th grade. And you kind of took your health in your own hands and, you know, learned what you needed to learn. I would imagine the reason why you had to spend money on your food is because your parents didn't quite agree with your new direction, right?
Right. They thought I was crazy. They were calling me a witch while I was mixing my herbs and making my concoctions. And yeah, they didn't get it at all. And in fact, they all, you know, both my parents passed away. My father of a massive heart attack when he was 47. My mother got a rare form of Parkinson's. It was just a horrible death. And my stepmother, who's still alive, is extremely unhealthy. So I just didn't want to end up like that.
And you know, when you were sharing your story, I was appreciating what you shared about feeling angry about the whole fact that doctors didn't know how to help you, and wanting to take that challenge and, you know, trying to really use that energy to help yourself heal. When I was experiencing my health crisis, trying to get off Zoloft, I remember there was a point when I realized I was experiencing a lot of withdrawal symptoms from coming off the Zoloft. And I also felt that kind of anger that I was put in that position and making a, you know, kind of a pivot in my life to try to devote my energy and my exploration to help other patients to come off the medication and not have to suffer the way I had suffered because nobody knew what was going on. And I think that's truly a good use of anger.
Agreed. That was definitely part of what my decision to go into this field was. I don't want anyone to suffer like I did. And then that expanded into, let's just create health and prevent suffering, right? And rather than waiting till people start suffering, let's get them healthy so that they don't end up in that situation.
So we both came into this similar field, but coming from different backgrounds, you know, like in medicine, psychiatry, it was a very much medication, psychopharmaceuticals, medications, that kind of stuff. And I went from there to kind of pills and capsules and as supplements, and then ended up as a holistic psychiatrist. I think your approach, though, came from your understanding of food and how to use diet to help you and how to, you know, use what plants are growing and herbals to, and you actually used it to help yourself. A lot of the foods that are out there that are bad for you are made so that it can hook you into eating it because they taste good. There's something about that kind of food that makes it hard to give up, right? And especially sugar is quite addicting. And so I wanted to ask you how you work with people who really like, you know, eating their hot dog, their pizzas, you know, they want a soda every time they sit down with a meal. How to shift the kind of the social kind of brainwashing, the advertising, and also the addictive nature of these foods. Because I think there's a lot of doctors out there. They're a model of health. They eat really well, you know, and they're trying to teach all these wonderful principles. It's all very data driven, but it's not very powerfully capable of shifting people's behaviors. I'm sure that that's a challenge that you've had to face working with patients and other people come to your practice and you look at their diet and you say, you know, you need to do this or that. And if they're suffering a lot, they will follow. But if they're not suffering yet, they're going to, you know, like they might say to you, it's too hard to do, or I don't like that kind of food.
You can't out-supplement a bad diet. So all the supplements in the world are not going to cure your symptoms if you're eating garbage. If you eat garbage, you'll have a garbage body. If you have nutritional deficiencies, one or more of your organs are not going to function properly and you won't feel well. So there's a few key points to be made here. And one is you hit the nail on the head. Processed food is purposefully addictive. Sugar is more addictive than cocaine. There's chemicals like MSG, monosodium glutamate, which is a flavor enhancer, which is highly addictive. And by the way, it's a neurotoxin. Artificial flavors are highly addictive. Even smells, they put specific smells in food, not just food, but this is slightly off topic, but also in products and cleaning products and laundry detergent and deodorizers that are very addictive and very, very toxic. So there's a lot of addictive properties to processed food. And it actually, those chemicals, the sugars, the high sodium, which we call the bad salt, the processed salt, because salt is a mineral that your body needs. So we're talking about the bad salt that gets added to processed foods and all those other chemicals actually alter your taste buds. So once your taste buds are altered, you don't like real food. You don't like the whole, you know, unaltered foods. So part of the process is to gently, what we call gradiently, reduce the bad stuff that people are eating and introduce some better quality. And, you know, everybody has a different gradient. Some people can do it easily and quickly, and other people, it's going to be one little thing at a time. So before I start working with somebody, the very first thing that we do is we have them write down at least 2 day, minimum of a 2 day food journal. So I can see at a glance what they're mostly putting into their body. And that gives me an idea of what path I'm going to need to take with them. And before we start working together, I have them, I explain very carefully that part of doing this program, one of the responsibilities you're going to have as a patient is to keep a food journal of everything they are eating and drinking. And I let them keep that journal any way they want to. They can write it, they can voice record it, they can take photos, they can download a food journal app. I don't care how they do. I tell them you can scribble it on toilet paper with a crayon. I don't care. We just need to record what you're eating. And you need to show me that food journal on a weekly basis. And then we're going to make some modifications based on what I see and what I think you need to do. And then we might start with something like this. Okay, so I see that you're drinking 10 bottles of Pepsi a week. Do you know that Pepsi is bad for you? So first step, educate. Why is Pepsi bad? We want to make sure that we don't make an assumption that somebody knows that something's bad for them. Here's why, or I'll ask them, why is it bad for you? What is it doing to your body? How is it harming you? So you're giving them a reality on what they are actually doing, what action they are taking to harm themselves, not to criticize them, but so that they have a full awareness, because awareness is really important in being able to make choices. You know, that's one of the things about adulting, you know, making responsible decisions and choices. If you want to be healthy, that will contribute to your health and not harm it. And then I will say to them, okay, so I would like you to try this soda. I actually did this yesterday. I had a new patient, 19-year-old male. Those are, you know, no offense to any 19-year-old men that might be listening, but they are generally difficult to work with because they usually have a processed food diet. Like you said, peer pressure. This kid is in college. He eats what's available at school. He was drinking soda every day. So first thing I suggested was trying a better quality soda. And that was sweetened with alternative sweeteners that are not bad for you. So not artificial, I'm not talking about artificial sweeteners, which are chemical, but an actual plant-based sweetener like stevia or monk fruit. So I said, do you want to try this soda? This is the brand. And he actually looked it up on his phone. And I said, try that. See if you like it. If you like it, well, we're going to replace the bad soda you're drinking with this better soda. And then my, you know, evil plan after that would be to gently get him off the better soda. Let's just say if he wasn't willing to try the better soda, I would say, okay, so I see that you're drinking 10 bottles of Pepsi a week. Do you think that this coming week you can try to drink 6, no more than 6? And the times that you're not drinking soda, what would you like to drink instead? And then we'll just slowly, and it could be like watching paint dry, but slowly start reducing the bad thing. And while we're giving the body some better quality stuff and allow the taste buds to adjust to it. And then, of course, when you start giving some good quality supplements into the body too, that reduces the cravings. It reduces the addiction. So that's really the key to doing it is gently. If you look at somebody's food journal and you say, oh, you're eating all this bad stuff, stop eating that now and only eat this, they will not be able to do it. It's like telling, you know, any addict or substance abuser or anyone gambling, addiction, anything, telling them just stop. You cannot do that. It doesn't work. And they will quit. They will stop trying and you will be a failure.
There are conferences in DC, I think twice a year, where a internist who's holistic presents all the data for a vegetarian diet. So stay away from meats, those kind of things. Of course, stay away from all the wheat and dairy, white refined sugar, you know, perfect diet. No meat. And I've gone to his conferences a couple of times. I tried for, I think, 2.5 weeks until I got tired of sand in my salad, you know, at Chopped. A couple of weeks with a vegetarian diet, I lost a huge amount of body fat right around my middle. I knew that it was great, but, you know, I got tired of sand in my salad and I wasn't going to, you know, make the salad every day. So I noticed that even with all the good results very soon, I did return back to an old habits or old, you know, dietary things. Some of it is cultural. Like, for example, I grew up with more of a Chinese diet as opposed to salads and, you know, American, even the best kind of foods. They're not culturally aligned with what I grew up with. So that really failed for me, even though the results were very quick to convince me that for at least for that period of time, it had many advantages. What are some of your thoughts about integrating some cultural, you know, kind of considerations when people are trying to eat more healthy?
The location that I'm in New York, I actually see people from pretty much every country in the world. I have many Chinese patients. I have Japanese. I have Korean. I have Indian. I have Pakistani. I have from all over Europe, Russia, South America, Central America. So the Caribbean islands. So I'm very familiar with all these different foods. And you know, because people are putting on their food journal the native foods that they eat. The interesting thing to think about is the role that your genes play in what foods are actually compatible with your body. Because people from, let's say, the Caribbean are going to be genetically more compatible with tropical fruits than somebody from, let's say, Northern Europe. So that's a thing. That's a thing that you have to take into consideration. I don't recommend that people, I'm not really a big fan of a vegetarian diet. I understand that it helped you lose weight, but were you going to become deficient in amino acids after a while? Were you eating enough protein? That's a rhetorical question, but.
Apparently you need to eat a lot to get everything that you need from a vegetarian diet.
There's plenty of vegans or vegetarians out there that will disagree with me. I do get into conversations like this quite frequently, but just from a completely biological perspective and from my clinical observations, it looks to me like people who eat a heavier animal-based diet generally are healthier. And most important thing is where the animal comes from and what the animal is fed and how the animal is treated. So I do not recommend that anybody eat any animal products from a confined feeding animal operation, those commercial farms where they feed the animals garbage, they shoot them up with antibiotics and hormones, and they mistreat them and stress them out. Well, I get all my food from an Amish farm. I know the farmer. I know what they feed the animals. I know how they treat the animals. I know everything about what's going on with my food. And that's really being in control of my health. There's actually a website that you can go on called farmmatch.com. If you maybe want to put this in your notes for the show, farmmatch.com/Dr. Corey, D-R-C-O-R-I. You put your zip code in and you can find out where you can get nutrient-dense, clean food grown on a small-scale family farm and either delivered or there's pickup locations for some of them. So, for example, my office is a pickup location for the community. And so getting back to your original question about ethnic food choices, so I'll give you some examples. I have a lot of patients from Mexico that grew up on eating tortillas. And when they come to this country and eat the GMO corn tortillas here, they get very sick. So what we do is we find them a better quality, a clean version of tortilla. So I teach my Indian patients how to make their chapati with better quality, you know, organic clean flour or alternative flour. Asians in general, you know, no matter what Asian country you're talking about, if you tell them don't eat rice, it's bad for you, that's going to be a problem. So you have to find, help them find organic rice to at least to start with, and then what other alternatives they might be willing to explore. Respect the fact that, you know, you grew up on this food and that's what your body is going to probably end up doing best on. We just want to make sure you're eating the best version of it possible.
So the website is farmmatch.com. Is that FARMMATCH.com /
Yeah. So I do promotions for them. It's a nonprofit organization that matches these small scale, nutrient dense, clean family farms with consumers. So there's a lot of food available on those farms.
My next tough question is, I'm sure you work with a lot of professionals, and these professionals are kind of like driven to work all the time. And so they neglect their foods. So they might wake up in the morning, they drink their, you know, cup of coffee and get a bagel or croissant. They're dashing off to work. They may not even have time for lunch. They're working all day, 10-hour days, hardly ever drinking water. You know, they're like on the phone. They're busy, busy, busy people. And that's success, you know, for them. You know, you're in New York. You know what that kind of like lifestyle can be? And then at the end of the day, they're exhausted. They're going to pick up something from somewhere. They're not going to cook. They're going to just like, they're too exhausted. They can't even think, you know, much less, you know, wait 30 minutes to get their food. So they're going to pick up something maybe on their way home, and that's your meal for the day. So it's a constant grind for them, very high stress. And yet they're kind of putting their nutrition maybe fourth in priority above, you know, like underneath their work and their family and their dog, you know. Whatever it is that they have to take care of first. So how do you work with people like that? Because they're going to come to you, you know, feeling sick, exhausted. They think, well, I may need to do something about my food. But then they have these habits that they've built up over like many decades, and habits that honestly, the business world, other professions, you know, encourage, because they don't want you to be like, taking time for lunch if you could make another 2 or 3 phone calls during that hour, right? So how do you help these people to be able to take care of themselves?
I do have, I have attorneys, I have accountants, I have architects. Those all start with A. That's interesting. But accountants, especially when we're having this conversation in tax season, and they are some of the most stressed patients that I have. I have a lot of business owners as patients.
Long hours.
So yeah. People who are, you know, type A personalities, really driven, really successful, they ultimately show up in my office because their energy or their health is starting to interfere with their ability to perform, to produce, to keep going. And they recognize that they need to change something. So that's always the first step, right? The recognition that something needs to change. So a lot of it has to do with educating them about what needs to change. So for example, if you're chronically dehydrated, if all you're drinking is caffeine throughout the day to keep yourself going, and then you're going out to business dinners and drinking alcohol, you're going to be chronically dehydrated because both caffeine and alcohol are diuretics. They're pulling fluid out of your body. And dehydration can lead to many symptoms, including exhaustion, but also it can actually induce anxiety, right? Because when you're dehydrated, your heart rate increases. And when your heart, most people, when their heart is racing, they become anxious. And dehydration also throws off your salt and fluid balance. And then you just become mineral imbalanced as well, which creates more, it can create some mental health symptoms. So the first thing is education and giving recommendations. So I had to do this week. I had a patient who was heavily drinking espressos every morning, and very low on water. And one of the things that I discovered I need to help him with is kidney function. And I told him that this is because you're chronically dehydrated. I said, and if you continue like this, it could lead to kidney disease and kidney failure and then dialysis. So I just kind of give them a reality check on it. And I ask them, is that what you want? Do you think that you need to change something now? And so the first thing that we decided to do is that he's going to alternate his espressos with decaf, or put a little, you know, half coffee, half hot water, just to dilute the amount of caffeine he's ingesting. Again, just gradiently reducing the bad stuff and increasing the good stuff. But then as far as those bad habits about, I'm just going to grab, you know, a bagel on my way to work from a store, or a croissant, I will give them alternative suggestions that are easy to implement. So that is the key. You can't ask people to do something that either they feel like they cannot do or not, they're not willing to make the effort to do. So, for example, recently I had a patient who was stopping in a deli for a bacon, egg, and cheese on a roll for breakfast. And I said, okay, why don't you bring your own better quality bread? Here's a brand of bread that's actually got nothing bad in it. It's not even made out of flour. It's much better for you. Bring that with you to the deli. That's easy enough to do, right? You grab a couple of slices of bread on your way out and ask them to make the sandwich on that bread. So a lot of people do that. A lot of people are gluten intolerant, mm-hmm. so they can't eat the bread in a store or restaurant. They'll bring their own bread. The deli's not going to mind. It saves the money because they're still going to charge you the same thing for the sandwich, but, you know, they're not using their bread. And it's a starting point, right? So now you've eliminated the bad roll or the, you know, the bad bagel that they're eating in the morning. And then you go from there. And there's a lot of stuff that happens, because sometimes when you're working in an office, they'll bring in bad stuff. They'll bring in donuts. They'll bring in pizza. It's an ongoing conversation. Changing the way you eat is a process. It's not a quick fix. So if they feel peer pressure, oh, you can just have one slice, it's not going to hurt you, I actually give them a response to say, you know, I'm going to this nutritionist and I found out that I'm allergic to meat. And I'm spending money on trying to help fix my health. And if I eat this, it's going to cost me more money. You know, just whatever they feel comfortable saying. They may have to do this with family members, moms that are trying to push food into you that you've been told is not good for you. So we're giving them words to say, we're giving them alternatives to try. And then eventually we start getting to easy meal prepping, you know, it is actually necessary to put some effort. If you want to eat well, you have to put some effort into it. So I tell them, look how fortunate you are, you know, because there's technology, because there's electricity and indoor plumbing and all these conveniences that you have. You don't have to go out hunting for your food. You don't have to go gathering. You don't have to go fetch water. You don't have to chop wood to make a fire. Mm-hmm. You know, look how easy you have it. And just to give them some perspective on the fact that just because they can't, you know, now press a button to make food appear, that they have to do a little bit of chopping and a little bit of stirring, that it's still something that's much easier than the way our ancestors had to get their food.
Wow. I love that. I would love to have you come back for another podcast, because this is such useful information for everyone. I'm going to end with one last question, which I think is really relevant. You know, food is almost as close in some ways emotionally as love and nurturing. And so obviously your way of handling people's nutrition must be very nurturing and kind and patient, so people can trust you and that they can
bring you their food diaries and not feel like you're going to be judging them in a negative way. And so all of that is very nurturing. But I think ultimately, we're up against some ideas that people might have that if they have a stressful day, if they want something to make themselves feel better, they have to go to the sugars or they have to do something indulging to kind of feed themselves, because it has become enmeshed with this idea that this is love, or this is how I take care of my stress or loss or whatever it is. And if we can have you share your wisdom about how do you handle people who say, oh, you know, Dr. Corey, I had such a stressful day, you know, like week, every day I had to have like 5 chocolate chip cookies just to get by, you know, whatever it is. How do you respond to that kind of mentality and paradigm?
Great question. And it's so common. So we call this emotional eating. And so many people do it. I used to be an emotional eater myself, so I can totally identify with it. What's interesting is when you start eating a real nutrient-dense diet with real foods, that kind of goes away. And it doesn't even work anymore. So I can't now try to feed my soul, my sadness with sugar, because it just makes me feel sick. But here's the approach that's very effective. When you're under stress, or when you're unhappy, when you've gone through a loss, when you have grief, when you've gone through a hard time in life, I can guarantee you that you've become mineral deficient, especially if you're eating processed foods. So minerals come from good quality soil that's fertilized with natural fertilizer. That's why we like these small scale family farms that are using natural fertilizer, because we know there are minerals in the soil. The nutrition comes from the soil, goes into the food, and then into your body. If you're not eating mineral rich foods, you are mineral deficient. And then when you're under a lot of stress, you're burning more minerals, and that now you have negative minerals in your body. When you are mineral deficient, it will be much more difficult for you to handle stress.
Mm.
And you will start developing symptoms. They could be anxiety, depression, insomnia, things like that. It actually can cause any symptom. It causes a lot of mental health symptoms when you're mineral deficient or mineral imbalance. And that's when you'll start having these sugar cravings. And that's when it really feels like sugar is fixing it, at least temporarily. But it's not. Actually, sugar is pulling more minerals out of your body. Sugar interferes with your body's absorption of minerals. So now you've actually made yourself worse, and it becomes a vicious cycle. So one of the solutions is to feed people good quality mineral supplements. We actually have minerals. I call them chill pills. So they're just minerals. Nothing else is in them. But as you start repleting the minerals in your body, things calm down. You're able to handle stress better. I had just one quick funny story. I had a patient who had anxiety. She presented with anxiety as one of the many symptoms that she had. And she was doing very well, changing her diet, but she was in process. And she's a nanny, and she worked for an employer. The mom of the child that she was a nanny for was a very nasty person. Very toxic, very mean. So this is the story the patient told me. The mom asked her to work the Sunday, and she said, no, I can't. I already have other plans. She wasn't supposed to work that day. And the mom started ranting at her and yelling at her and said, with the money I pay you, you should never say no to me. And so my patient, I had told her, if you're ever in a situation where you're feeling very stressed, you can take some extra of your stress minerals. You can't overdose on them. They're not high doses. You just take as many as you need until you feel calm. So while the mom was screaming at her, she started taking, she said she took 8. And she said this was the first time that she didn't get upset. She didn't run away crying. She didn't melt down. She didn't unravel. She felt totally calm. And then at the end of the rant, she said once again to her employer, "I'm so sorry, but I can't work this Sunday." And she said for the first time, the mom just like shut up and then said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, I don't want to lose you. You're the best nanny we've ever had. Listen, I'm gonna give you a bonus," and actually handed her some money. Wow. So I'm like, wow, the stress minerals can actually help you make more money too.
Well, can you help the audience know how they can get those chill pills from
you? Sure. Yes. So on my website, drcorey.com, go on shop. And then there's a drop down menu, shop standard process supplements. And they're on there. They're called Mintran. So Min is for mineral and Tran is for tranquilizer. So it's not like taking a pharmaceutical. I'm on it right now. They don't knock you out. They just regulate your nervous system. So if your nervous system is hyperactive, it helps it to run at a normal pace. And all it's doing is giving you some magnesium and calcium and iodine. And so there's a lot of nutrients that people become depleted of when they're under stress, and minerals are a big one. There's a lot more we could talk. If we want to do this again, specifically talk about other nutrients that help with mental health symptoms. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. We really want to thank you for answering some really tough questions about nutrients and how it has an impact on people and how deficiency can cause much more anxiety and things like that. I want to let you know where you can reach Dr. Corey. She has a website and it's drcorey.com, drcori.com. And you can find her on YouTube through Dr. Corey Stern. This is really great information. I've learned a lot from your approach, because I do think that your approach of being gentle with people and having things evolve gradually and organically with your diet is a really wise approach for patients. And I think that it just comes from probably many, many years of experience that you've come across, that you are able to share that wisdom. For those who've liked what you've heard, please subscribe to this podcast for more helpful information and give this podcast a positive rating. I hope you'll subscribe to my website, holisticpsychiatrist.com, where you'll find more wonderful articles, podcasts, and links to all my social media platforms. And if you wish to integrate high-quality nutritional supplements from reputable sources and support my holistic psychiatry practice, please register for Full Scripts free online dispensary that helps keep you supplied with the industry's largest catalog of professional-grade supplements available on my website under the Products tab. Thank you again, Dr. Corey, for being on my podcast. I look forward to sharing more insights with the audience here through podcasts and articles, and hope you'll thrive as you build your life from the thought up. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
The content provided by this podcast is for informational purposes only and has not been approved by the US FDA. This podcast is not intended to provide personal medical advice, which should be obtained from a medical professional.